Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Web3 Ed podcast. On this week's episode, we have Sanjit Paul Chowdhury. Sanjit is an award-winning author who's been ranked on the Harvard Business Review's top 10. We had a great conversation about a decentralized world and how platform thinking can help solve some of the problems we now face. Let's get into it with this week's episode, but first, a word from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Bath. BAF stands for the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation, and they are a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to accelerating the development and adoption of Web3. BAF hosts networking and educational meetups and supports blockchain clubs at universities worldwide. BAF's sponsors and supporters include NEAR and the Algorand Foundation, who help BAF launch more educational activities. To learn more, follow the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation on Twitter.
Are you sick of expensive classes that don't help you in today's competitive work environment? EduCoin was too. So we built a decentralized learning management system that allows any teacher to host an open access industry-sponsored class. If you're a teacher and want to learn more about how you can build the class of the future, or a student looking to grow your career, visit educoin.store to see how they are helping students, teachers, and employers connect to make a more healthy secondary education ecosystem.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Web3 Ed podcast. Today, we have Sanjit on the podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jake. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So let's get started by introducing yourself. For our listeners that don't know about you, give them a quick bio about who you are and how you got into the Web3 world.
Absolutely. So I'm best known for my work on the platform economy, and that's typically what the Web3 world is contrasted against. So I've written a lot of foundational work on the platform economy. I've written 3 best-selling books, including Platform Revolution, a top 10 HBR article on the topic of platforms. And after having worked in the platform economy over the past decade, helping both the big tech and the large traditional enterprises move in this direction, as well as helping the governments regulate the large platforms, I started seeing this shift towards protocols and essentially tokenized blockchain-based protocols, and fundamentally seeing a new way to organize market interactions around protocols. And that's what got me interested in Web3. So that's where I come from, and that's what's kind of brought me into Web3. So that's been the background. But essentially, all through, my core focus has been how are shifts in technology leading to fundamentally new ways of organizing market activity? And that's where I first looked at the platform economy, and now increasingly look at Web3.
Gotcha. So I actually read one of your recent publications, and it was all about Web3 builders. So tell me a little bit about this platform economy that you're thinking through and how you think builders fit into it in layman terms, perhaps, for our students.
Right. So especially when we think about the shift from platforms to Web3, I'll just call out how the platform economy works and how we believe that the Web3 space is going to change that. So when we think about the platform economy, today's large platforms, Facebook, Apple, Google, Amazon, and many others, fundamentally, they organize market activity, which is they organize either content producers with content consumers, buyers with sellers, different stakeholders, and manage their interactions around their platforms. Now, platforms essentially bundle both the infrastructure for managing these interactions and the governance for managing these interactions. What happens when we move towards Web3 is that a lot of these things start getting unbundled. So with protocols and with Web3, infrastructure can be built by anybody outside your business. So you could start a protocol and have other stakeholders come in and build dApps on top of it. And essentially, while Amazon would build the end-to-end marketplace itself, if you were to do that in Web3, you would have the underlying protocol, but then you would have somebody build in the search interface. You would have somebody else build in a listing sorting or listing hosting application. Somebody else would build in a personalization application. So With Web3, you essentially have now a whole ecosystem of creators bringing together this market infrastructure. At the same time, governance again becomes decentralized if you want to open out governance to the ecosystem. So in platforms, governance is very centralized. So if Elon Musk decides that he wants to kick out certain people off Twitter, it's very, very centralized. But when we move to Web3, who can be part of an ecosystem, who cannot be part of an ecosystem, what should the future roadmap be? All of these can be opened out through a DAO and essentially managed in a very decentralized, autonomous fashion. And so we essentially now start seeing new ways of performing the same functions of market management. If you look at two other things, if you look at funding used to be very centralized in platforms. So you would go to a venture capital firm, raise funding, and that's how you would bring funding to your platform business. In Web3, a lot of companies still go to VCs, yes, but you also have tokens. And if tokens are set up in the right way, there's a lot of speculative element to tokenization today, so I don't want to get into that. But if tokens are aligned to the value that is created around a protocol, you can use that to fund activity on the protocol. You can reward actual activity with tokens. And so these are the factors that are fundamentally changing when we move from the platform economy to Web3. But the core, you know, the reason Web3 is interesting, or the reason the platform economy was interesting in the past, was because these mechanisms provide the way to organize all of our economy. Traditionally, before the internet, the economy was centered around really large vertically integrated businesses and global supply chains. So you had these really large traditional businesses that would integrate across the entire value chain. And with digital technologies, what happens is that the cost of managing business starts dropping. What are typically called transaction costs, they fall dramatically. And so you can now have these new organizing mechanisms, which are digitally enabled to start organizing these economic interactions. All of that no longer needs to be managed in these tightly controlled traditional vertically integrated structures. So that's why I find this very interesting. With every new shift in technology, we're unbundling, we're decentralizing it even further. And that's what makes it so compelling, especially for builders. You know, somebody coming out of a university today has just so much more opportunity than they did 30 years back. And that's just because the economy has moved from vertically integrated corporations where you could join middle management to a point where you can now just join a DAO, learn something over there, set up your own DApp, integrate it into different ecosystems, and through that, start building your own business. So that's the whole journey we've been through if you think of how business has evolved over the last few decades.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I think I struggle most with the platform economy and this idea of, you know, debundling and more empowered users is going back in history, US history even, governments that didn't have the power to tax or kind of have that centralized control via tax, they didn't have authority. So how does authority kind of resolve without mandatory taxes or, you know, I guess like a forced consumer buy-in with that central authority? I guess how does that get resolved in this new internet controlled world, or this new decentralized control world?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the question that we need to ask is, in any system, now that we have the tools to build centralized systems, we have the tools to build vertically integrated systems, and we have the tools to build decentralized systems, right? So at any point, we need to think about which parts of our business should be set up using tools which are centrally, you know, which are centralized, tools which are vertically integrated, and tools which are decentralized. So I'll take a simple example, right? Think of Amazon. When it started out, by as a book retailer. So it owned the end-to-end supply chain, if you will. And so that was a very vertically integrated business model. Then it moved into the marketplace. And with the marketplace, it moved to a centralized model, but it was no longer vertically integrated. It was more opened out. You had third-party sellers joining in. And now if it wants to take a part of its business and it wants to open it out further, and let's say, you know, it wants to set up a part of its marketplace on a protocol, you would have the ability to build components, marketplace components around the core protocol that they're putting out. And so essentially the key point over here is that think of any system that you are going to be part of, think of any business you're going to be part of. There's a place for vertical integration. There's a place for centralized but open, and there's a place for decentralized completely, right? And so understanding where you keep it vertically integrated, where you keep it centralized, but open, where you keep it decentralized is important. And Apple is, again, a great example of that. It's very vertically integrated on the phone, right? The phone is not opened out. Google, the phone is completely opened out, and anybody can build on Android. Apple is very vertically integrated on the phone, but it's centralized and open on the App Store. Right. So that's where this becomes interesting. And if tomorrow Apple starts investing in an open ID where I can take my data beyond Apple, and I'm just using Apple as an example because Apple claims that they don't want to lock in data. Let's say Apple's personal health record, they want to make it into a decentralized ID. Then that would be an example where the phone would be vertically integrated. The App Store would be centralized but open. And the health record idea that Apple puts out would be completely decentralized. So you have to think of how to use all of these three tools in the right way in your business. I don't really think that most institutions will go into completely decentralized mode or completely open mode. You'll have to use a combination of these tools to run any business.
Gotcha. And do you think more and more businesses will take this model? I know Linux and Wikipedia are kind of somewhat modern examples of businesses at scale that have somewhat decentralized or somewhat, you know, community owned. How do you see the next wave? Like in 2030 or 2040, do you think we're going to have more of these kind of public, good or decentralized, pseudo decentralized businesses? Or do you think the next great business will be another Apple or Facebook type business?
I think I think we're at a very interesting point in this transition where we're going to see the rise of completely new infrastructures. And I think that's where most of the interesting business models will move. So one of those infrastructures is potentially the blockchain, but the blockchain is not necessarily the best solution for a lot of factors. So the blockchain is really good at determining, you know, at managing asset authenticity. Do you own a certain asset? Verifying that, it's really good at that. The blockchain is not that good at, for example, managing decentralized identity. And so we are now seeing new technologies that are coming up to manage decentralized identity, decentralized reputation. So I believe that as we see these shifts in technology, we're going to need fundamentally new trust mechanisms. I mean, ultimately, the blockchain is a trust management mechanism. So if we move away from centralized platforms, or take a step back, when we move from vertically integrated businesses of the past to centralized platforms, we essentially needed businesses who could manage openness very well, those who could bring in third-party developers and engage them, those who could engage users at scale. And so that's where the Facebook business model, Apple business model, all of these business models derived a lot of their power. Now we are seeing the shift towards figuring out how businesses can manage not just openness, but really trust at scale without requiring a central intermediary. So the companies that will be able to solve the trust problem will be the ones that will be best positioned to build a lot of value going forward. So that is one thesis that I have over here. The second key thesis is that if you look at the other evolution that happened over the last 10 to 12 years, since your question was broader than Web3, I'm just going to take it a bit further. Between 2005 to 2012 is when the social media era took off, cloud adoption took off. And so that was the period when we just produced a lot of data. All of us produced a lot of data because a whole generation came onto the internet with mobile connectivity, etc. So we just produced a lot of data. And between 2012 and 2017, we perfected the technologies to manage all this data, what we think of as big data, large scale machine learning, all of that technologies got perfected around that time. And now we're really seeing the next generation effects of that, where we're seeing generative AI, the ability to create really large language models and understand human input even more precisely, and get to a place where machines can start performing in a manner that is indistinguishable from humans. So my point is that we've been on this journey, just as we've been on a journey from vertical integration to openness to decentralization, we've also been on a journey of massive data production, massive data handling, and now massive intelligence creation and output creation. So the next big businesses will also be be the ones that will be able to really solve AI problems inside workflows. Today, AI is still fairly independent of workflows. You need to go to a ChatGPT and you need to structure a prompt in a certain way. So the burden of creating the workflow is entirely in your head. If you want to solve a large problem, you have to think of what are those various prompts, how do you take the input and string it together. So what I believe is now also increasingly going to happen is you'll start seeing all of the value of this AI that is being developed integrated into workflows so that you have end-to-end autonomy and intelligence coming together. And that's going to be another really important opportunity. And that's why I believe, Microsoft is so interested in this, because the threat of generative AI is not so much to search as it is to workflows. And Microsoft has always been in the business of automating workflows with its Office suite and with its enterprise software. So I think that's where the real money is with this shift. So that's the other big shift that I believe is going to happen over the next few years.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to come on here and say that the last about 10 minutes of the podcast did unfortunately get cut off due to technical difficulties. However, what we discussed in this last piece of the pod was all about what Sanjit would do if he was 20 again, or what advice he would have for a current 20-year-old that was trying to build and trying to get into this world of platform thinking. And his advice, again, reiterates his points that he was making on the podcast. It is that platform thinking and some of these new technologies such as AI or blockchain should be used sparingly but smartly. Don't try and rethink everything or redo the entire wheel overnight. It might not happen. Start building and gradually improving existing processes and workflows to thoroughly decentralized or add layers to it. So for example, he talked about Microsoft on the pod and how they've always been around to help people work and to make workflows, communications, all of those things more easy. How do those benefit from decentralization? How can we rethink core services and instead of rebuilding them from scratch, make small or moderate enhancements? He also talked a lot about building and learning to build. It's great to talk about these things. It's great to theorize. But at the end of the day, you need to see how the market's going to react. And you need to learn firsthand the complexities of building and what is and isn't really feasible before you can make a decision on whether you'll implement it. So I don't really do what he fully said justice, but that was the summary. And I really do appreciate Sanjit's time. He's always welcome on the pod. For all those listening out there, I really appreciate your time. Again, follow us on the Blockchain Acceleration Foundation website. We have a Telegram, Twitter, Discord. Any way that you want to connect with us, we probably have it. We have awesome opportunities right now to get grants as well as to participate in builders programs, such as the Algorand Foundation is hosting one, and also to go to events with us like Consensus and ETH Denver. So make sure to check out our pages, get involved, get your club involved, start learning what it takes to build in the space or educate or invest, whatever you're interested in, we can help. So again, thank you for listening. Thank you for your time and good luck building out there. We look forward to hearing from you next week. Also, if you are interested in learning more about the platform economy and learning more from Sanjit, we do have a special promo code in our show notes, so make sure to take advantage of that. This is exclusive to our listeners, and we'll go all into platform strategy and how you can use it as a Web3 founder. And thanks, as always, to Alo Diba for the soundtrack to this podcast, who is currently playing us out.